And away we go, Scott Spears along with you for the ride on the Now program. Tonight, you folks are in for a treat because we are facing some tough times right now, so we've got to cheer up. We've got to look toward the future, and we've got to be happy with what we have right now. And the guest on tonight's program that we're going to spend the balance of the hour with is one of my favorite people. We have not had a chance to visit with her in a couple years, but she has always been absolutely kind to me. She is a groundbreaker in the world of television, appearing on such great television series as The Jeffersons and 227. She is still working after nearly one half century in the entertainment business, and she is still in demand because she is that good. She can sing, she can act, she is one of the most gracious ladies I've ever had the opportunity to interview, and that's why we wanted her on at this time. She is the wonderful Marla Gibbs. Before we get to Marla, though, we had so many requests. Everybody wants to hear the theme song. Here it is. There's only one thing that will put you in a better mood than that, and that is our guest for the hour, the legendary Marla Gibbs. Marla, how are you?
I'm fine.
It's so good to
and
hear.
And that's really a blessing to be able to say at this time when we're going through such a crisis.
Oh, my goodness. You know, Marla, when you hear that theme song, it's such a happy time. What do you think of when you hear that?
Well, I think of the Jeffersons, of course.
What did that show mean to you?
Oh, to me, it meant everything. It changed my entire life. I was working at United Airlines when I got the show, and I stayed at United Airlines a couple of years more before I resigned.
What was it like being on a big hit television series like that?
It was everything. It never occurred to me that it would be that good, last that long, or any of that. So that was not only a pleasant surprise, it was really more of a shock.
You know, Marla, the show is still on today. Almost 40 years later, did you think it would have that type of staying power?
No, and no one else did either. But it did.
It certainly does. What do you think it is, because not all shows do hold up that well, that it is about the Jeffersons that still allows...
Well, I think the Jeffersons represented society as a whole. They were the people who worked for tips, the people who worked, period. The people who had money and just volunteered their time, donated. Then there was the professional business owner. And then we had somebody in the, like Mr. Bentley, who was international. He brought that phrase in so we could find out what was going on there. And then we had the bartender downstairs, Danny, who ran the bar. And then we had Mother Jefferson, who represented all the mother-in-laws who have problems with their daughter-in-laws. And you had me, who was actually an employee who would not take any crap and had problems with my boss. So a lot of people who had problems with their boss or their father or anyone who had any authority over them, I really spoke for them. I said all the things they couldn't say. I did all the things they couldn't do. So one year we had the household technicians, and I represented them, and we went to Washington. We didn't get in the White House, but we were across from the White House in the park. So it was really life-changing.
Absolutely. You know, Marla, I think about the time we're in now, and the world has basically stopped. All restaurants have stopped. You're out in California. What is it like out there right now?
The same. Everything stopped. We're told to stay home. You wear a mask. You keep your social distance of 6 feet apart. So whatever's happening any place else is happening here also. And you can't see your favorite shows because there's an update every time you look up. Counting how many people are affected and how many people have died. Whether or not we can get the mask. And if we did, how many we got and what went where. And then you have the people who, now we need ventilators. So now they're asking the people who, the hospitals who don't really need the ventilators, to ship them over to the people who do need them. So there's everything going on here that's going on every place else. We're all in this together. It doesn't matter where we are. So we have to treat it like we're together. We have to care about one another. It's one time when we're all forced to be together and realize that what affects one affects the other, and to try to help wherever we can.
You know, Marla,
so I don't know who you pray to, but whoever you pray to or whoever you believe in, keep the faith that you are protected, you are loved, and you will get through this, but you should do what you're being asked to do, because faith without works doesn't work. If you have faith, you do have to take the step out on faith, knowing that the other two will follow for you. Anyway, that's how I do it.
You know, Marla, I know you stay very busy. You still work an awful lot. What has it been like to have to stay home during this whole mess?
Well, it's a lot of work that doesn't get done at home because you're out a lot. So now there's time to do that.
Do you like being at home?
I like being wherever I am on this side of the grass, honey. You have to appreciate wherever it is you are, because you could be someplace else doing nothing and not even be on the planet, if you understand what I mean.
I certainly do, especially at this time. You know, Marla, the thing is, they say we're just about to go into the worst of this. We haven't even seen it yet. Are you fearful? Are you apprehensive? What's your feeling about what's to come?
I really am not. I'm sort of like in a lull. It is what it is. It'll be what it be. And I also say my prayers for what I want it to be. Wish all of us to come out of this healthy, alive, and energetic, able to do what we want to do, and to learn the lesson that we should love each other and not hate each other and not judge each other. So now we don't want the Mexicans to come. But the only Americans really are the American Indians who were here. This is their land. We took it over And now because we built everything on it, we call it ours, and we don't give them anything. So we have to learn to be fair and to care about people, all people.
You know, Marla, one of the big aspects of this, you talked about the social distancing 6 feet apart. Is it hard to be away from your circle of friends and family that you normally are around?
Well, yes, it is. It's hard not to be working, but we can't work because we can't. You got to have less than 10 people, so you can't work. Because if you're working in television, it's going to be more than 10 people because you have to deal with the crew and everybody that makes television work who never get recognized, but they're there, the sound people, the light people, everybody.
Mm.
So it's impossible to work right now.
Marla, what were you doing when this came on? It seemed to come on so fast. Were you at work and then one day just have to stay home? How did it come about in your life?
In my life, really, I was off from work. I'm off unless I get a new job. I'm not on a continual series like I was. So my agent has to find something for me. They say they want me. I go in for the audition. I get the job. And then I do the job. But none of that is happening right now. And I was off. My grandson, we're writing my book as we speak.
Mm.
And my grandson wanted to do a video from the CD I did in 2006, which I never got to promote because I got the aneurysm that year and had the surgery and had to start all over. But he loves it, and he decided we should do a video. So we got his friend, who is a director. He's done a lot of good shows, like the Braxtons, Toni Braxton and her family and her sisters. He did that television show, and he's done several others. I can't remember the name of all of them. But he agreed to do my video. And his father actually was the stage manager for the Jeffersons, so we were very close.
Mm.
So he's followed in his father's footsteps, because after his father was the stage manager for the Jeffersons, he became a director. So now his son is a director, and we put that video on that Saturday, and I had a beautiful dress and had done my nails in a flashy silver frosting to go with the dress because it was all beaded, and I intended to go Monday and take it off my nails and put my regular polish back on, which is a very subtle shade that goes with everything. And by Monday, it was too late, I couldn't go. By Wednesday, they had shut the nail shop down. So I still had this on my nails to remind me. But that's what I was doing. I was doing the video. That was my last thing.
Marla, you talked about something there that I don't know if a lot of people know about. In 2006, you did have an aneurysm, which is a very serious thing to have. And people who are going through a rough time now, could you talk a little bit about how that all happened in your recovery of that aneurysm?
Yes, because I've had high blood pressure practically all my life from the stresses when I was growing up in Chicago and the stresses in Detroit. From the marriage which was not as happy as I wanted it to be, and I did not want to take medication, so I didn't take medication, so I had an aneurysm. So I always thought I was stress oriented. I thought my wanting to get up and do things was, I like doing three or four things. If I'm going to work, if I can stop by the cleaners and pick this up and drop off that at someplace else, if I get all that done, I'm very happy. But usually something interferes and you can't get everything you want to do done. So at any rate, I had a theater at this time, and a minister had come by and asked me to do a video for him, and I said, well, I have to go to the bank first. So he said, okay. I said, you go on around there, and I'll be there. So he went around the corner to a young man who was doing videos, and I went to the bank. And when I got to the bank, instead of getting out the car and walking, it was taking another man a long time to park. He was in my way, so I got out the car, and I walked up on the little grassy area they have on the side that has a pole and everything on it. And I went around the pole, and next thing you know, I was out in the street on my face. So the guard ran over to me, and he said, are you all right, Miss Gibbs? I said, no. I said, put me in my car. He put me in my car, and of course, I had to fuss with God. I said, what were you doing? I asked you to watch me, and you let me fall, and I'm hurt. And the Spirit said, didn't you say you had to go to the bank before it closed? Well, you better get in there. That was my reply. So I got in the bank, and one man who was in front of me said, oh, you come, you take my place. I said, I must look terrible. But I went, and I got through at the bank, and I went back to the theater. I said, I can't just go around there. Now I got to go see what I look like. So I went in the bathroom. I saw what I looked like. And I had some nice little pink soap on the counter of the bathroom by the sink. And it looked like it was so soft and pink. And so I ran the water on my hand and ran some of the soap in my hand. And then I put it on my face, and my face went, because it burned. And so I got past that, and I went around to the corner. I said, well, I can't do this video. He'll see it. When he sees me, he'll understand. He said, oh, what happened? And I told him, and he still wanted to do the video. So he's talking. He says, I'm sitting here with Marla Gibbs. Meanwhile, I'm dabbing the blood from around my mouth and looking at him like he's crazy. And he's just going on like nothing happened. And then he wanted me to say something. Why God let me fall, number one. And number two, why he wants to do this video now when I look crazy. So anyway, we got through that. But that was the first time. So I never went to the hospital. I said, I can't go to the hospital now because I've got too many things to do. So I'll wait till I'm through and go. So when I got through, I went to the hospital, to the emergency room, and they looked at me, they took my pressure, and they said, your pressure is 300 over 200. Mm. I said, oh. So they gave me something and brought my pressure down. I got in my car and went back home. Did I learn anything? No. So the next time I was going out to do a commercial, and I was out in the valley, and I went too far on the freeway, so I said, oh, shoot, I'm going to be late. So I'm riding along Ventura looking for a phone booth. I saw one. I pulled into the little shopping area, got out my car, and there was some rocky area. But I'm looking at it, and I'm going over to the phone booth. I stepped over in that, and boom, I was on my face again. So I said, oh, shoot. So I sat up, and another man had come. He had gotten on the phone booth. So I said, sir, would you call my agent? And I gave him the phone number. And I said, and tell them I'm running late. Would you tell them to call the commercial people and tell them I'm late? And a lady behind me was saying, lay down, but you're bleeding, lay down. And I'm trying to shut her up. So in the meantime, here comes this big fire truck, which is the emergency, you know. And they came over, they took my blood pressure. They said, what is your name? They used to ask your name. Do you know where you are? Do you know what day it is? How old are you? So I told them all that, and she said, how old are you? I said, I'm 30, born in 31. You do the math and don't tell me. So she went around to the other side, and she took it again. She said, I took it because I thought there was something wrong on the other side. She said, but your pressure's over 300. I said, okay, okay, I know I got to go to the hospital. She said, well, it's right across the street, and we'll take your car over in case they keep you. So I said, oh, well, that's nice, thank you. So they did that. They brought my pressure down. I went in the bathroom, and I said, what did you put on my, because every time I felt, you know, not only did I hit my eyes, my eye sort of blocked, but I hit my mouth. I said, how did I miss my nose? It's in between. And it's sticking out. So I said, well, what did you put on my face? Did you put iodine or something else? She said, no. She said, that was from where you fell. So I said, oh, okay. So they let me go home. Meantime, I stopped by the commercial on the way home. I said, I just wanted you all to know I'm so sorry I messed up this day. They said, oh, you didn't have to come in. I wanted to see I wasn't jiving that I was hurt, you know. So I went on back home. Did I learn anything? No. The next time I was at the theater in the valley on Cahuenga, and there was a play that Lloyd Bridges was in. Not Lloyd. That Bridges was in, and he was with a young lady, I can't think of her name right now, but she's a wonderful actress, beautiful, and we were doing an interview at a small radio station, and she told me she was doing this play, Love Letters. I said, you know, I have never seen that play. She said, well, why don't you come? So I said, well, thank you. So she said, you call me and I have tickets for you. So I did, and she arranged tickets for me. So I took my sister. We ran across the street. I went in and gave them tickets. And then we went up into the theater. Nobody else was up there yet. And so we were trying to figure out where we were going to sit. I said, you know what? I'm going to the bathroom first. So I left her up there, and I went to the ladies' room. And when I reached over to flush the toilet, something in my head went plukup. So I said, what was that? Whatever that was wasn't good. And I'm looking in the mirror trying to see what happened. And I'm looking. So then I backed up to the door, and I'm still looking in the mirror, and that's where they found me on the floor. And so my sister said, they came into the audience and said, is anybody here with Marla Gibbs? And she jumped up and said, yes. And they took me over to a hospital. It turned out I had an aneurysm. Well, you know, anytime you have your blood pressure is working against those veins, and they get weak. So at that point, which might have been good for me, because and most of the other people that have these type of aneurysms, brain aneurysms, they die. So I didn't. Of course, I didn't know I didn't die because I was unconscious. But my sister called my daughter, and she came and took care of everything, and she decided to move me to another hospital where they had this wonderful doctor who does these operations, and most of his patients survive. So he did my surgery, and I came out of it. And it took me a while, of course, to learn to walk and talk and all that again. But anyway, that's the story.
Mm.
So what's happening now, I don't think about too much. Just do what they say. Keep the faith and do what I can do and try to help where I can, where I don't have to be within 6 feet.
Mm.
So that's the whole story, honey.
You know,
that's the whole story.
Well, it's interesting, Marla, as I listened to that story, I had not heard that before. The three times that happened, I think, what if you had not been in public places when that was happening?
Yeah.
It could have had a disastrous ending.
Of course, I don't think about what could have been. I think about what was. And I am grateful that I was in public places.
Absolutely. When you were going through the recovery, because that's kind of what this country, I think, is going to have to go through at some point during this, what kept you going to rehabilitate, learn to talk again, learn to walk again? What was that inside you?
Well, my daughter didn't let anybody know I had an aneurysm because it would be hard for me to work again. So obviously we were all thinking about me working again. And so nobody really knew I had an aneurysm unless they talked to somebody who knew us.
Mm.
So I didn't really have a problem. I was trying to get better, trying to eat, and trying to do everything I was. And I'm hard-headed, so when I was in rehab, I didn't want to put on the diaper that they used. The bathroom was right next to my bed, so I couldn't see why I couldn't go to the bathroom. So I kept trying to get out the bed and go to the bathroom, and of course I ended up on the floor each time. And so I said, well, Mom, you're going to have to stop doing this because we ended up on the floor.
Mm.
So the nurse told me when I left, she said, we're so happy to see you go because you scare us to death. They tied me in the bed. My daughter told me they gave them permission to tie me in the bed, and I would watch them tie me, and then I would untie it and get out the bed. So I was truly hard-headed.
We're chatting.
That's thinking you can do more than you can do, and that's what I was thinking. I could do more than I could do. Now I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking, put on the mask, stay 6 feet away, stay home.
Go
and you might be able to work again, darling. So that's where we are today.
That certainly is. We're chatting with the legendary Marla Gibbs tonight. We have about 20 minutes left in the program. Marla has graciously given us her time tonight, as she always has. But what we're going to do is take a little break here, because there's another show. Marla, of course, has been a part of two gigantic hits in the world of television, and back then there were only three networks, so it was tough to have a hit show. She had two. Of course, one was The Jeffersons, and the other was a show that still plays today, a great show, 227. Let's listen to a little bit of the theme song from that very popular, great television series starring Marla Gibbs. The theme song from the hit TV series 227, sung by and starring Marla Gibbs. Marla, what do you remember about that theme song, singing that song?
Hold on just a minute.
We're chatting with the legendary Marla Gibbs, star of the hit TV series The Jeffersons, 227, also still working today after nearly a half century in the entertainment business, and we are so happy of that.
Thank you, Scott.
Oh, no problem. Marla, you sang the theme song to 227.
Yes.
How did that all come about?
We had done another theme song with my son and daughter doing backup, and they decided to go with another one, not to go with our song. But the gentleman that they had do the song asked me to sing the lead on it. So I did.
That song is so popular. People love it. What do you think it is about that song and show that are still so popular?
Well, I think there again we represent most of the have-nots, most of the people who work for a living, live in apartments, have to pay rent, light and gas and water and all the other problems that they run into. So we represent the people as a whole in the country.
And of course, your daughter in 227, Regina King.
Oh my God.
Oh man.
I love her.
She's
my daughter to this day.
Has now gone on to win an Academy Award, Golden Globe, 3 Emmy Awards. What was it like when she won the Academy Award? Were you watching, Marla?
Oh, yeah. I definitely was. And I was over her house. Well, as a matter of fact, I was over her house for the first one. And her mother was in town. And we watched her walk. And then we watched her win.
When she won and that,
I call her every time.
Oh, when she won that award, the highest award that
she's been so gracious and loving to me all these years. She was actually in the play that 227 came from. We did the play, and she didn't play my daughter in the play. She played the little girl down the street who got on my nerves. But she was good. She was in another workshop. Not mine, but another workshop before she came to do the play. So she was already like a professional.
What is it
so
like?
When we got ready to do the show, the girl who played my daughter, she was too old to do the part. They wanted someone younger. So we brought Regina in. And then I said, Regina looks just like Hal. They both have sandy hair. They both have light brown eyes. She could really be his daughter. So we fought for her, and they gave her to us. And now they're very happy they did. Well, even before this, she had the show where she was a police officer. South, I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, I did an appearance on her show. And it was funny because when she comes to my door, they're looking to search my house because my son is questionable. And so in order to get in, so they said when you open the door, say Brenda. Of course, her name wasn't Brenda. Brenda? So it was a lot of fun. And then we did an interview together after the show. Well, we keep up with each other. She came over to help me trim the Christmas tree year before last, and then this year she came by. And she came to Norman Lear's office with me. She was going to help sponsor me getting a star on Hollywood Boulevard. Her and Norman Lear signed for me to get the star, and she offered to pay for part of it, which was really, really, really nice. And, of course, they didn't choose me for the star, so everybody was disappointed, including me.
Well, hopefully that will come around. You know, Marla, it's interesting because here's this girl that you knew, young girl. You gave her her first shot on television, and she goes on to be an Academy Award-winning actress.
Yes.
How does that make you feel?
Wonderful. Wonderful. We love her.
You still keep
and
up.
She's down to earth, a very, very normal down to earth person who cares about everybody. And she doesn't meet any strangers. When you meet her, she's always gracious. So she's a wonderful daughter.
Hmm. It's a wonderful thing to hear that you guys still get together. And it's interesting, because I don't know if a lot of people know this, but we can talk about it a little bit here. When 227 was on the air, one of your co-stars was Jack A. Harry. And
yes.
There was a lot of tabloid rumor at that time that you and she did
not. And I don't know who started that, because that was not going on.
But that story ran forever. But it's not true, as you say.
No, it's not. And but, you know, people want to hear the negatives. That's on the people, too. They cash in on the, and tune in on the negative faster than they will anything positive.
And to this day, you are still friends with Jack A., is that right?
Yes, we've done at least three or four shows. She played my daughter on the show, we didn't call it the White House.
First Family, I think.
First, thank you. First Family. She played my daughter in First Family. Then we were in another show together. We didn't have a scene in The Man on the Third Floor. That was about a murder in an apartment building. And I played in that, and she did too. So we've done several things together. And she was in The Jeffersons Live. She played Louise's friend, the one I got the job from. She played Diane.
And in
the original show, the actress was really supposed to have the job as the Jeffersons' maid. I was only a guest star. But they liked the line I delivered, and so they decided to give me a couple more shots, and then they offered me the contract, and she didn't get it.
You know, it was interesting. Last year, the Jeffersons Live aired on ABC, and you were there as a surprise, playing the character you had played 40 years earlier in that first episode. What was that?
44 years earlier.
44. And when you came...
I was 44 when I did it the first time.
Wow.
And 44 years later, when I'm 30, I did it again.
When you came through that door, that crowd, I've never heard a sustained applause. You couldn't even get the whole line out. It was amazing.
It really was. And I was so grateful and so happy that people love that character. I've experienced a tremendous amount of love from being Florence. People don't say, "We like you." They say, "We love you." "You don't understand. We love you." I said, "Wow." And they always have to have a hug. Of course, I can't go out now because I can't hug them.
You know, that's interesting, Marla. I want to talk a little bit about that because you are one of the nicest people I have ever met, have ever interviewed. I can tell the audience that you are genuinely a kind person. You remember people. You're just a gracious lady, as I said in the beginning. When people see you, what is the response in general? Is that ever tough to want to go to the bank or the grocery store and people...
Well, I go every place I want to go.
Yeah.
I refuse to allow it to interfere with my life. People used to say, "What are you doing in here?" I said, "I'm buying food. What are you doing in here? What do you think?" And they'll say, "Can I have an autograph?" I'll say, "Yes." And sometimes if I'm in a hurry, I say, "Well, you have to wait till I'm through, and then we go out to the car." They say, "Okay." Because if I stay in there, I'll have to sign too many.
You know,
I'm always grateful and I'm always very happy that someone is interested in me. Sometimes you forget. I remember I was going to the theater in Hollywood, and on the way back to my car, I thought this man was following me. And so I was waiting for him to get close so I could tell him. I said, "What are you following me for?" Before I could say anything, he said, "Oh, I just love your character." I said, "Oh, that's right. I did a show."
That's so funny. Marla, it's interesting because most of us will never have that recognizability because you were a star, still are on television today, but a star.
As I tell everybody, all the stars are in the sky. I'm a working actress or an unemployed actress. But all the stars are in the sky.
I guess I should.
That's where we get the problem. We make people stars and we put them above everybody else. We're all one.
I guess what I meant to say was recognizable. So recognizable.
Yes.
From being a very popular person, when television was only three channels. There is probably very few people, are very few people, who have not seen you in this country. What kind of feeling does that give you?
It's very warm, wonderful feeling, and very grateful to have achieved that success, and very grateful that people liked the character.
If you could put something you have done in a time capsule that would be opened 100 years from now, what would you put in the time capsule?
I think I'd put the Jeffersons and 227 in there, because all of my co-stars on the Jeffersons was just like family. Each one of them was wonderful.
So many of them, as time goes on, end up leaving us, and I think right now it's just a couple are left from the Jeffersons.
Absolutely.
Is that?
We lost Ned Werdemer, and then I think we lost Paul Benedict just before we lost Ned Werdemer. I got a chance to see him at Martha's Vineyard. My daughter did a short film that was up for an award, and she won the award. But we were in Martha's Vineyard, and they were showing it. And I found Paul Benedict again, who played Mr. Bentley. And I called him and told him where we were. So he came down, and he saw the show, and we got a chance to see each other and talk again. He and I were close on the Jeffersons.
And, of course, Sherman and...
And, of course, Ned the doorman and I were very close. We did all the autograph shows together when the show was off. They have autograph shows at some of the major hotels, and different people come from all over the country, and they buy the pictures, and you sign the pictures and take pictures with them. So Ned and I did that every year until the year that he died. Matter of fact, the year that he died, we were supposed to do the show again the following week.
Is there anything left, Marla, that you, when you get back to work, that you would still like to do? Is there a part or a medium or something you still want to do that you have not done?
Yes. There's a show that I want to do based on the CD that I did called It's Never Too Late. I really want people to be encouraged when they're going through anything, to know that things that happen to us prepare us for the journey we're supposed to be on. We don't see it that way, but that everything that I didn't like that went on for me in childhood played a part in me being successful.
Is there any...
Because I didn't let it deter me. But we get in trouble when we make that the be-all, end-all. This is what happened, so I can't do this. And if you think you can't, you can't. But if you think you can, you can. Of course, I wasn't thinking about that when I became successful. It was really a big surprise to me. But I realized that all the things that happened for me, I had to say thank you to all the things that I didn't like, because they prepared me for where I was going.
Would this be a stage show or a television show? How do you see that program?
It would be a television show. It could do one or two things. It could be a talk show with guests that are going through, maybe they quit school, and down the line they start to realize they need to go back to school. They go back to school, they get the degree or whatever they need, and now they're successful.
That would be a great program. Marla?
I think so.
Yeah, it would be. We need something like that. We need inspiration.
That's what I figured. We need to see somebody loving, not successful, not killing and murdering and vengeful and all that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, Marla, it kind of comes back to, again, being recognizable for such a long period of time. Is there anything that the public who only knows you, and I think about you writing your book, is there anything the public who just knows you from your roles does not know about the real Marla Gibbs?
Well, when they get the book, they'll find out. It's called It's Never Too Late.
I love it. How soon do you think this book will be ready to be published?
Oh, we hope it'll be out sometime after summer or late summer.
Are there things in the book that you think will surprise people?
Yes.
Is there anything you'd like to tell us now?
No.
I took a shot at it. I took a shot.
That's a good try, Scott.
Well, that's going to be a great book. You know, one thing I've always been surprised about, and last time we talked, you told me about this. Your name is not Marla Gibbs. And how did you come?
No, my name is Margaret.
Margaret.
Named after my mother's sister, Margaret.
How did you come up with the name? I've never known anybody else named Marla.
Oh, I found several people named Marla.
How did you?
I think I'm making up these names, but there's always somebody else's mind who's linked with yours somewhere else that you don't even know, thinking the same thing. I felt like Margaret was too mouthy. Margaret Gibbs is too mouthy. I noticed all the different actresses that I admired had a name that flowed. If like Margaret O'Sullivan, that still flows because it's heavy on the front and heavy on the end. Margaret Sullivan. She was one of my favorite actors. Betty Davis. But Margaret Gibbs kind of drops off. My name, Margaret Bradley, which is my original name, would have been all right. Of course, I kept Gibbs because my children's name was Gibbs. And I wanted to keep the connection.
Mm.
So I came up with Marla.
And it certainly has worked all these years. Marla.
Yes, it did.
Oh, I don't think there's anybody else who's been as recognizable as you who has that name that I can think of.
Okay. I can't think of.
Yeah. Yeah. Marla, 100 years from now, when people look back, how would you hope they remember you in your time?
I hope they remember that I was a caring, that I loved, that I was forgiving, that I was all the thing God wants us to be, and that I was always a work in progress.
Do you ever foresee
working to achieve that?
Do you ever foresee a day when you would want to retire?
Say it again.
Would you ever want to retire?
No.
Do you have any...
I always said I'll never retire from anything.
Do you have any regrets about anything?
Well, I did have until I started to recognize that I can't have because they prepared me for whatever I'm doing today.
Marla, before we part ways, because it is such an interesting time in this country right now, one of the great things that I've always loved about you is your singing and your ability to sing. Not a whole song or anything, but could you give us a little line of maybe something you like or a song that you like to kind of cheer up people right now who are going through a rough time at home?
Okay. As long as you breathe, you'd better believe it's never too late for life. So drop all your fear, 'cause as long as you're here, it's never too late for life. Scheme your schemes, dream your dreams. Living your life is the way. You cannot borrow from tomorrow. You only get one day, so don't give me the blues. Just hear my good news, it's never too late for life. Start being bold and stick to your goal. Forget all that stress and strife. Just keep the faith and trust your heart. But use your head, 'cause that's being smart. It's never too late for life. And with some help from above, ooh, lots of help from above, It's never too late for love.
Oh, wonderful.
That's my song from my CD.
I love it.
I wrote that song at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, it's a.
And he has all the things that's absolutely true. If you're still breathing, it's not too late.
That's right. Marla, as I say, you have always been such a pal to me, such a friend. To come on the program during this time when people are having a rough time means the world to me, and I want you to come back. I don't want it to be so long between visits because you are the original article. You are a lady with class and a lady who is so gracious, and I truly mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you so much, Scott. Well, you're always doing something wonderful and thoughtful for people. And I love what you do.
Thank you, Mark.
And I appreciate you inviting me to be a guest on your show.
You are always welcome, Marla, and I look forward to that book. I love you. Stay well, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Have a blessed evening, a blessed life, and stay safe. Stay 6 feet away. Keep your mask on. And follow all the guidelines.
Thank you, Marla.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The legendary Marla Gibbs. Now that is a lot of fun. Stay tuned, more around the corner.
You have a tremendous relationship, but you don't know who he is?
I've never met the man. We've been on the same show, and we've been, you know, I think he's tremendous, fantastic leader. He kills all the journalists that he doesn't like. I have to, like, deal with the fake news. They make up things about me, Scott. This is the reason I come back on your show. You're not fake news. You're in the epicenter of real news. You're from Ohio. No one lied of John Kasich.
Hi, I'm Robin Leach with those champagne wishes.